Now, before you go any further, I often say to you, have you seen The Time? Mm. Right, we've actually now got a guest who's going to talk to us about The Time.
Just before we do, I have to say, Toby, nobody...
He's not coming on now.
No, I know. I sung the little ditty, you know, which seemed to upset him a few years ago.
Jinxed the guest
appearance. And all of a sudden, Toby, who was going to come on and talk about things, is no longer coming on.
So what he describes as a nerve-wracking experience for him is never going to happen.
No, it's not, no.
Sorry about that, Toby. Yeah. Instead, we've got Eddie Platts, who is owner of Time Factors, which is a watch and watch accessories online retailer. Eddie, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
Thank you very much, Eddie, for joining us. Now, Mr. Parry's got a bit of a fascination with watches. I think the last count he had 27 in his watch collection. I've only got two, I'm afraid, and mine are not anything like as lavish or as complicated as some of his.
That's right.
But, Mike, you spotted a story the other day about why watches and clocks are always set when they're in advertising at 10 to 2, right?
What I found absolutely astonishing about this is I didn't realise that when all these huge sports stars are paid millions, you know, to promote watches, and we know how important they are to the world of sport. Formula One seems to be run by Rolex and all that kind of stuff. They always have the watch at either 10 past 10 or 10 to 2, if you see what I mean. And I wonder, is that a well-known sort of pattern for the fingers of a watch to make a watch look as though it's smiling at you, even though it's worth £50,000?
Well, I think the original idea was to put the hands in a position that didn't obscure the manufacturer's name and logo on the dial.
Yeah.
Oh, is that simple then?
I see. That's very interesting. So, go on, sorry.
At 10 to 2 or 10 past 10, it doesn't obscure the logo, and it does look a little bit like a smiley face.
Yeah.
Whereas 20 to 4 would achieve the same result in not obscuring the logo, but looks a little bit like an unhappy face.
Yes, I understand what you mean. Eddie, why is there such a fascination with watches, do you think? You've obviously been in it for most of your life and all that. I mean, you know, we mix in the world of sports sometimes. You see footballers, the first thing they do when they become wealthy is they buy an expensive watch, almost as if it's a status symbol. I even know one footballer who I've known for years who actually has what you might call these movable boards where he stores his watches, so that if it's a chronograph, you know, if it's a Rolex and it doesn't need winding up, the watch is always moving, even when it's not on his wrist.
I know, it's an illness, really.
Is it?
Well, you're not supposed to say that, Eddie. I mean, you're the guy that's selling this stuff, aren't you?
I'm selling them. I'm also collecting them as well, and I can tell you it's an obsession and an illness.
Is it an obsession?
It is an obsession. I mean, you see a watch, you've not got anything like it, so you must have it. It's like collecting anything.
Hmm. Well, you say it's like collecting anything, except the thing is, Eddie, some of these watches are hugely expensive. I mean, if you don't mind me asking, what is the most expensive watch you've got in your collection?
It's a Panerai.
It's a what, sorry?
A Panerai.
And how much would that be worth?
I've not heard of those, Panerai.
It's probably worth about £4,500 now.
£4,500, eh? That's a pretty expensive
watch.
That's
not as much as your Rolex, is it?
Well, I don't want to go into that, you know.
Man of the people.
No. I mean, would you say, Eddie, that the watch of watches is the Rolex?
No.
No? What do you mean, no?
See, as usual, you got the wrong watch.
It's probably the best-known watch, but there are watches out there that could cost as much as your house.
Well, you don't know how much my house is worth.
No, it's not worth that much.
You can certainly pay six figures for some watches.
Like over 100,000?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, my house is worth a lot more than that, actually. But, I mean, no, I'm sorry, I'm only joking. No, I do understand what you're saying. In fact, I've seen watches advertised in, you know, these glossy Sunday magazines, which cost, like, £230,000. I mean, how can you justify that sort of cost for a watch? Does that represent the skill of the watchmaker who's put it together, or does it mean that it's made out of very valuable materials like gold and platinum and this sort of thing?
Well, it's a combination of craftsmanship, materials and profit.
Is there a kind of one-upmanship going on as well? Because, I mean, I've always said that there's no point in having an expensive lighter because you're probably going to lose it, an expensive watch because somebody's probably going to steal it off you, or an expensive pair of sunglasses, you know, because in the end you're always going to leave them at the beach. Is there a kind of a competition going on between watch manufacturers to make the most expensive watch and to try and sell it to, I don't know, Ronaldo or somebody?
Well, possibly there is, but I mean, it's watches are status symbols.
Yeah.
And you will always find that somebody who's wearing an expensive watch shoots his cuff to make sure that you see it.
Well, I mean, this is the thing with sportsmen, isn't it? I mean, we just had the conversation when Roger Federer wins yet another tennis title. The first thing he does is he turns to an assistant and says, "Where's the watch?"
But that's because he's getting paid by
them.
Well,
of course he is. Of course he is. But I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, what Eddie has said is quite right. It's a status symbol. So if Roger Federer's wearing this watch, wow, that is the status symbol to have today, isn't it? With the new Wimbledon champion, and that evokes status, wealth, all these sort of things, Eddie, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Mm. I wear a cheap watch.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there is a worry, I would have thought, Eddie, and I know we've heard stories of this from places like South Africa and Brazil, where a guy's driving along in the street and he's got his arm out the window.
Yeah.
And somebody, I mean, there was one case where a guy's arm was hacked off for the watch. I mean, if you seriously want to walk around, say, any city in Britain, London, Manchester, you know, Birmingham, Liverpool, Glasgow, Edinburgh, late at night with a very expensive watch on, you take life in your hands, aren't you?
Yeah, you certainly are. I mean, watches worth a lot of money are easily disposable as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course they are, yeah. When I got my Rolex, Eddie, I took
it to... How much did you pay for it?
Well, I don't want to say, actually, if you don't mind. But, I mean, I took it to Smith Square in London, which is the head of Rolex in this country, and they sent that back to Switzerland for a full service, put a new bevel on it, all this kind of stuff. I mean, it was treated like a Rolls-Royce. Now, I just said to you, is Rolex the best? And you said, well, it's probably the best known. But what would be your choice of watch if money was no object? And how would it be treated? I mean, you know, insurance-wise, do you have to keep it in a safe, all this kind of stuff?
Well, the problem is with an expensive watch is there are a lot of people that have got their ultimate watch.
Yeah.
Put it in a drawer and never wear it. They just take it out and look at it.
Really?
Well, if you've got a watch that's worth £250,000, it's highly unlikely that you're going to go out with it on your wrist.
Well, you see, that's a fascinating thing.
I mean, you have to hire a bodyguard. You'd have to be driving around in a car that was... I mean, it's like if you had a Rolls Royce. Yeah. You wouldn't just leave it parked on the street anyway,
no,
would you?
No, but, I mean, do people then get imitation watches in much the same way as women who wear million-dollar earrings, you know, sometimes get paste made and they know they've got the real thing at home? Does the same thing happen with watches?
I'm sure that does happen with watches.
What's the most expensive watch you've sold, Eddie?
The most expensive watch I've sold?
Yeah.
Probably a couple of £1,000.
Right, OK.
Right, OK. So you're dealing with the working man type aspiration to watches, are you?
A working man?
Yes.
Who's paying £2,000 for a watch?
Yeah.
Have you gone mad?
No.
What working man can afford to pay £2,000 for a watch?
What sort of watch would that have been, Eddie?
That would have been a pre-owned Rolex.
Oh, right, OK.
Pre-owned.
Oh, I see. You mean a second-hand one?
Yes.
Second-hand, we call it.
No, you know, it's pre-owned.
Pre-owned.
No, it's the same as like when you buy a pre-owned a Mercedes, right?
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. All right, Eddie, well, I'm glad that you pointed out...
Do they go up in value, by the way, Eddie, these Rolexes, over the years?
You would rarely lose money on a Rolex.
Oh, that's interesting.
They go up in value.
Was your Rolex a pre-owned one?
No.
Well, why did they...
Oh, yes, it was. Yes, it was. Sorry.
No,
yeah,
yes.
No, it came...
This is what I'm putting up with
it
here.
It came from a dealer, a travelling dealer. Yes, that's right.
What do you mean? Fell off the back of a lorry?
No, it didn't fall off the back of a lorry. And the thing is, Eddie, I think I'm right in saying, aren't I, that when I took my Rolex watch into Smith Square, if there'd have been anything dodgy about it or fake about it, they would have seized it.
And arrested you.
Yes, because I think every Rolex is registered somewhere, isn't it?
They maintain a stolen register. Lost and stolen register.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Yeah, well, I went in the building and came out a free man, so...
you regard that as a champion day. Listen, exactly, Eddie, thank you very much indeed. Eddie Platt's there, owner of Time Factors up in Sheffield in north of England. Paul says, so collecting watches is an illness. That explains a lot. Hashtag 27 watches. This is Talk Radio.